Please listen to the end of this episode for a special announcement. Welcome to TNNX. This is the final one of Series 2, with just a few tracks that didn't quite make it into the last few weeks of the show. My name's Liam. Scott, you're here as well. Hello.
Hello. Hello, hello, hello.
How do you feel? We've just recorded the last episode of the series, the main series.
Oh, it's weird. It's just weird because, you know, it's difficult enough to follow on the timeline anyway because, you know, we're finishing years in spring.
Yeah.
But at the same time, lockdowns, confusing dates from politicians... Things are just, everything's just a blur at the moment, but I'm in happy places with what we've chosen. We'd love to not have anything in TNNX, but actually what it does is scream the fact that there's very much meat on the bones of the things that we're talking in the main episodes. Mm. So that's, it's good news.
Yes, there's some things from the episode 23, some from 24, some from 25 that we don't even know what they're going to be yet because I haven't edited last week's episode yet. It's a whole to do. Just sit back and enjoy it, basically.
Yeah.
This is the last chance to listen to some 2001 tracks before we get into 2002. I'm already excited. I've already got a rough idea of what's coming in 2002, but equally, there's so much stuff I don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah.
There's so many tracks I've got no idea what they're going to sound like. New art. Artists we haven't heard from yet. Mm-hmm. There'll be artists that are like, we've become so used to hearing like Steps over the years who are not going to be there. It's going to be very strange.
Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How weird.
But
before we get there, there's still so much more 2001 stuff for you in this episode. So just, yeah, let's listen to some stuff. We'll do some Tweenies in a bit. We'll do some Jerry Halliwell. Kate Winslet's got a little game we're doing later on because we've already done What If at Christmas. We'll do something else this time. Destiny's Child are here. But first, this is just all the biggest acts of the era in one track. How amazing is that? All-Star Tribute, What's Going On, comes after this little jingle. So this is quite a big deal because it's pretty much all of the big artists in America all on the same track. And Scott, you chose Lady Marmalade as your series winner for a good few weeks.
Yeah.
And that brought a lot of big names together, and we kind of spoke about the fact that the unity that brought the people together was really nice to see.
Yeah.
I mean, this is that on an even bigger scale. Obviously it's bound together by charity, which helps to unite them because they're all doing it for a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is a lot of massive names on a track that's trying to raise money for the Artists Against AIDS Worldwide charity. It's the All-Star Tribute, and the track is a cover of Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. Can't plug away, sister. Don't punish me, sister, with brutality, sister. Talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on?
So this was recorded at the start of September, just before the World Trade Centers, and they got so many people together. Yeah, so I find it much more complex, obviously, than Lady Marmalade. I do like the cover. I think the cover's good. Mm. And then actually after 9/11, they did take some of the proceeds from it to make a donation to support 9/11 and the Red Cross.
Yes.
I do think that the different people in it blend nicely.
Mm.
I think it's less of a Lady Marmalade and more of a Band-Aid.
Yes, completely.
And I'm not thinking the original Band-Aid. I'm thinking maybe the second Band-Aid.
Yeah.
One that doesn't get played anymore. So I can't say that it necessarily lights me up, but it's simply because it's complex. I have listened to it a few times on purpose.
Yeah.
Because I am trying to make sure that I listen to it the way that I would have listened to it at the time. And for me, it's all about, it's not about the lyrics, which is really strange. It's about hearing who comes in and figuring it out. So it's more of a game than a piece of art.
Yeah.
You know, so like whenever we hear different voices coming, I'm like, oh, that's that person. And I'm not listening to what's being said. So there is a message in the song, but simply because it is an all-star tribute, you know, I kind of wish I'd have bought it just to give them me money.
Yeah.
At the time.
I'd say I'm potentially distracted by the star quality on offer here, and I don't hear the message as much. It took me a good few listens to really start to pay attention to what they were saying as well.
Yeah.
Certainly the cause is very good. I think I think generally this is quite a good effort, and I sent the link to somebody recently because I wanted some help with a little project I'll get to what I've been thinking about. But I sent the link to somebody and they were like, oh god, this is not good. And I was like, do you think? Because I think it's okay. It's produced by Jermaine Dupri and Bono, so Bono's obviously got charity single cred in the past with his own U2 work, but of course Band Aid as well. And of course he puts himself front and centre of this. They've managed to get a big group of names together. I think all of the bits work really nicely. It's quite a diverse lineup. There's a good mixture of male and females, a good mix of races. There's a good mixture of age groups as well. There's a good diversity in terms of singers and rappers. All in all, this track ticks a lot of boxes in terms of those particular things.
Yeah.
I think, as is always the case, so it's better on paper than it is in practice. It something doesn't add up, but these singles never really do.
No.
They never do. Like, nobody loves Band Aid because it's a really great masterpiece of music. It's just the fact that it makes you think.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel. Nobody would choose to put this on, really, would they?
No, but with Band Aid, it has a sing-along factor, and then when you start singing, you could easily cry to it, whereas this is missing that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that sing-along factor as much. It doesn't have the cry factor. What it does do is the video's good.
It is good,
the video's interesting, and it stands up better as a visual than it does as a piece of audio.
Mm.
The video has got the celebrities revealing layer after layer of blindfolds, so they've got blindfolds on, and as they kind of undo it. Imagine having like a really thick tie around your head. As it goes around in a circle, it reveals a characteristic or something underneath it. So it goes through different ethnicities, religions, characteristics, sexualities, personality traits, and it just kind of validates people, which is really good because, you know, if your favorite artist pulls off a blindfold and it says something that you don't like about yourself and they validate you, that's pretty special. But that's missing from the audio, really. Well, it could be completely in that massive, massive melting pot of lyrics, but it's something special as a video. I think the video stands way ahead of the song itself.
I will say that, I think it's difficult to criticise this because of the cause, and I think it's impressive that they got all these names to come on the track to do it.
Yeah.
Musically, it's a lot on the ears, especially towards the end, the way it builds.
Yeah.
There can be like four or five different voices competing at the same time with quite a busy production as well. It stresses me out a little bit.
Yeah.
There's bits I don't like. I mean, Fred Durst's bit I wasn't a big fan of, but I love Eve's bit. She's a really she's a big highlight of the track for me. And I guess if we're going to start talking about the message of the track, it's a song that still resonates in 2021 because the original from Marvin Gaye is now 50 years old.
Woo.
And that was written about police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are in 2021 where that is still very much happening.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the main focus of this track being about AIDS awareness and trying to raise money to, you know, give to impoverished regions, as it was described as.
Mm-hmm.
Again, still a big issue. And then I know you want to talk about this because we've both been watching it. The programme It's a Sin has just been on Channel 4. And we've both seen it now. I watched it all in one day and I was totally floored by it. Scott, I know you want to kind of chat about this.
We did 3 days. Yeah, we did one episode. Then we did 2 episodes in one night, then 2 episodes another night.
Mm.
And I think that I hope that from that, there's like a massive I think that the timing's very interesting for that. The timing's definitely right for that to make a massive change in people's attitudes towards HIV and AIDS, and I think that actually to change people's perceptions just generally on like homosexuality too, because there's some very important points. Like it's non-stop important points, it's non-stop important characters, and it's something that I think everybody needs to see. You know, if you could teach this in school, or if you could make people sit and watch that in school as some sort of curriculum, I think you kind of should. And I know there's going to be people that don't like it. Like, I saw comments on something this morning on Facebook and I challenged somebody back because they were like, oh, I didn't realise what this was about. And somebody said, it's about gays. And I was like, are you fucking kidding?
Yeah.
Are you absolutely kidding? And I opened his profile and I was like, he's not even worth challenging because you should see the shit he shares and I don't know the guy.
Mm.
But I did challenge. But I think it's great. Like, I've even got a red iPhone, you know, so that's... Whenever I bought that phone, a donation was made to the charities. I can't think specific what charities it was, but it was HIV and AIDS charities at the time. But I would love to see It's a Sin be able to like raise so much awareness and so much money for people and families that have struggled. And yeah, I think that changed everything. And it's odd to think that, did this song have a similar 2001 impact about the disease? I don't know what promo was done about it. And I know that it was very much focused on Africa. Whereas, you know, I think that it's a nice kind of flip side of It's a Sin's a nice flip side of the seesaw of a kind of AIDS to show you how close to home it actually was. And, you know, people mightn't even realise whenever they think back through family trees or friendship circles or like, you know, friends of friends and stuff, somebody might have died of cancer and that's what was put down on their certificate, but actually they had AIDS and nobody knew, or families wouldn't say that's what it was.
Mm.
So it questions everything you know about people that you've lost in your life, really.
Yeah, what I loved about the show is that the friendship group at the centre, their kind of story was they were all reunited, and we got to see them having a lot of fun in the show. The show, although it was very sad in places, there was a real sense of fun and like togetherness with that core group.
Yeah.
And the kind of like the tension, the inciting incident of the drama, we all knew it was going to be sad, and we knew people were going to die because of, you know, the nature of the time of where it was set, and I guess what had been promoted for it and how it'd been described. The tension came from the exterior of that group. It came from the attitudes of other people, and that was what was the tension on the group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that Richie himself is conservative, which is revealed in the show, and also his family come from a very conservative background, who just are totally blind to all of this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
They don't know he's gay. When the AIDS advert comes on, they turn over. They can't even, it doesn't process in their brains. They just switch off because it's boring to them. I think the attitudes and how it tackles other people's feelings around that time is really interesting. And there'll be people who still are like that. And this show won't really find its way into their lives, I don't think.
No.
But hopefully the conversation around it's been so loud that hopefully it makes, you know, maybe one day they'll be flicking on Channel 4 and they'll go, I'll watch this.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I really hope happens. Because I've seen episodes of Queer as Folk when I was younger, but I don't remember anything from it. Like, I don't remember any points. I was kind of too young and unintelligent to understand anything that was higher levels. Like, this is not for me. This is me trying to watch something that's new, that's hype, that everybody's talking about, and open my mind. I have no idea what's going on. So I probably should watch that again now and see how much different it is. But I do think it's important, and that's why I would like it to kind of be taught, because it's only going to reach certain people. But like, even, you know, I'm a qualified sexual health worker. It was so interesting for me to see, and just to kind of see, because, you know, you forget things, and I'm like, this, It's a Sin for me is really important for people that, you know, don't ever feel like they're at any at risk of HIV or AIDS because they're in a heterosexual relationship, you know, but it's to remind them that, you know, that there was a stigma of people who had HIV or AIDS as being sluts.
Mm.
And that's just totally not the case, because, you know, anybody in a heterosexual relationship who's not put a condom on one day, or they've had an STI, especially people that have bragged about it and had sex knowing that they've got STIs, which is very, very common. And I know loads of people, not my era of people randomly, it's younger people than me that have done that and bragged about the fact that they've had sex with people while they know they've got an STI. That it should really hit home to them.
Yeah.
That's how simple this was. But there's important messages about, you know, the fact that you can, you know, and I think you'd even mentioned it to me in the messenger, the fact that Richie says to his mom that I had sex with all of these hundreds of people, and you know what, it was bloody good.
Yeah.
And it's important to let people know that you can enjoy sex.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what your sexual orientation is or gender is, bloody enjoy it and just know the risks of what you're doing. But it's kind of frightening to know that we're so close to that pandemic and people knew absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
you know, that's relatable for right now, to be fair.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Completely.
But on a very different scale.
Yeah,
very different scale.
No, it's a must watch. Anybody who is thinking about it, just do it, please.
Yeah,
to go back to the song, because it is 20 years since it came out. Band-Aid brought the band back together for 20 years. We Are the World, the USA for Africa, came back for 25 years. This year being 50 years of the Marvin Gaye track as well. With celebrities and pop stars having even more influence now than ever before, they've got platforms like Instagram and Twitter where they can use their platform to make a change and, you know, lead their fan base to these causes. And, you know, if a celebrity comes out with a statement, then fans will just blindly follow it.
Yeah.
Does this sort of time, I don't think charity singles are as big as they would have been back in the day, but the influence of celebrities could make a charity single to celebrate 20 years of this really important. And you think some of the names that they could attract and actually could make sense if you line, I try to line up each artist who performs on this track with somebody from the modern day.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some help from a friend, and we kind of worked out the list of who it would be. You think about, you know, Billie Eilish could come and do this. You could have like Lil Nas X could come and do this, who is, you know, is an LGBT rapper. You could have Harry Styles, who's very outspoken and flamboyant with his dress sense, and he's breaking down barriers as far as like the boundaries of masculinity and femininity kind of crossover. I think the influence of this could make a 20th anniversary or 25th anniversary of this really vital and worth exploring. Do you think there's something in that?
I think the anniversaries of it's just been done in a drama, and maybe drama is the new charity single, and actually a song that's 3 minutes long could not get that message across the same way that Russell T. Davis just did in that track.
Mm.
If they did bring something back, like I wouldn't at the moment, based on what's going on with It's a Sin, I don't think that it should be an American-led song. Mm. I think that Ollie Alexander, if they were going to do something, should be right there, slap bang in the center of it.
Yeah,
with everybody else around him making the messages, but it should be led by, you know, people that were part of that program, pretty much. But yeah, you could do it. I'd be intrigued to see the success of it and how much money they could raise versus how much money they could raise for It's a Sin. I'd love to see, where's it hosted, is it All Four? I'd love to see Channel 4 or something like that. But like, we've waived all fees for that and we've donated this fee for the hosting of this program to this or whatever. There's loads of cards now to be played with this program to make this, to make money and to just even to raise awareness, because I know that medications and things, we are in a completely different position with HIV, and you know we're on a different episode now, but it was HIV testing week, you know, when we recorded this, but we are in a different place. But it's, I think it's really important that people know about medicines that you can take before you have anal sex with other men, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Young people might necessarily know that and they mightn't get it taught, but yeah, we're in a strange position. But I would love to see the comparison between what a drama can do like that and what a song can do now in 2021.
Mm, good point. Destiny's Child with another single, a different sound for them. I'm going to put it out there now. I want bangers from Destiny's Child, and this is not, it's not my sort of speed, but we'll get into it, we'll dissect it. This is a number three for them. It's called Emotion. Words of a broken heart, it's just emotions taking me.
I've done my prep for this well in advance and I've written down in my sheet slower than Samantha, and I don't know what that means
who
Samantha is, or if I've just been writing something and then heard the word Samantha and written it down in my page. Do you know why I'd have written Samantha?
Yes, so the original track was by Samantha Sang.
Oh, it was, yes.
It was written by the Bee Gees, Barry and Robin Gibb. Yeah, the original peaked at number three on the Billboard Hot 100 back in the day. I think it was it 70s possibly? Was it a 70s track?
Yes, it was, yeah. And then it came back in 94. The Bee Gees brought it back in 94 themselves.
Yes, and you are correct in saying that it is slower than Samantha Sang.
Yes, okay. It did get a Neptune's remix where I was like, oh, brilliant, I'm going to hear a banging remix of this. And then listened to that and was pretty underwhelmed. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. Have you ever seen, what film is it? Have you ever seen 10 Things I Hate About You?
No.
No. There's a line in it where a girl goes, I know you can be overwhelmed, I know you can be underwhelmed, but can you ever just be whelmed? And the answer is
this
song. Yeah. I don't understand. I saw this coming. Destiny's Child are taking a big hit because I thought I had them right up there, right up there as like a powerhouse, and this is lovely. Like, it is really, it's a beautiful song.
Yeah,
but I didn't think I was going to be so disappointed when I saw it on paper. I was like, oh, I know it, I heard it. It's got a lovely guitar. Their harmonies, you can never fault. Their harmonies are brilliant.
Mm.
There's a lovely story, and I've put overall it's lovely. But I'm back to that offensive version of the lovely word where it's like, it's kind of like, it's nice.
Yeah, like a patronising kind of backhanded compliment.
I don't want to be, it's Destiny's Child, right? And the problem is I think they're really, really good as a three, but I'm really surprised. I'm like, where's the wow come from them? I was expecting to just be obsessed with them this deep into our podcast, and so far I'm not obsessed.
Yeah.
And this hasn't helped.
Yeah, it's odd that, isn't it? Yeah, I kind of feel the same. I think there's been other artists who've stood out more, and we've got more of them to come. We've got still got big Destiny's Child bangers to come, like Lose My Breath is a few years away. And,
yeah,
you know, there's other big tracks to come. They're still together for a good 4 years after this. You know, Beyoncé is doing her solo stuff, and Destiny's Child over the next few years. There's kind of a bit of crossover there. And again, this is a good showcase for Beyoncé as a solo artist, but with Kelly and Michelle doing some beautiful harmonies to back that up. Mm-hmm. And of course, they get their own solo bits too. There's kind of three separate stories within the same track, and the video divides into three separate chunks too. That like interweave towards the end. The video is fantastic. Yeah,
it's really good.
It's a great showcase for them as like visual performers, like the emotion, it's called emotion, but you know, the emotion that they put into the performances of the video is really beautiful. The way they dovetail at the end is just really sweet.
Yeah, my acting award goes to Michelle.
Because
Liam says, you've got the three parts of the video. You've got Kelly, who's sending her boyfriend off, so it's a story about how she's missing her boyfriend on, I think, the left hand side. Mm-hmm. The middle is Beyonce catching her boyfriend cheating, and it's the kind of reaction and stuff to her. But Michelle's is her grand dying in her house, and then they do eventually all meet up, but as the girls arrive, it's that, you know, that whole thing when you're fine until you see people and then you just break down.
Yeah,
like Michelle is just so believable in that, mm-hmm. just for that last second. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most powerful bit of the whole song.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, in the music video, that's brilliant. But I did find, because I'd done this prep before it finished, It's a Sin, when I thought back of it today, I was like, no, Colin's gran's the correct way. This is nothing. There's not, Michelle has nothing on emotion. Colin and his gran Colin and his mum, sorry, are the biggest emotional part for me. But yeah, I think if I could make a little trophy or a little certificate printed off my computer and write a name on it, I'd be writing Michelle and sending it to Michelle. Well done, Michelle, for emotion. That last bit's really good.
Well done, Michelle. She doesn't get the credit she deserves. I think it's always the Beyonce show, and then latterly it's Kelly. But I think Michelle is a very underrated part of the group. I like her a lot. Mm-hmm. She was on Buzzcocks a few years ago when Frankie Boyle hosted, and she looked like she played along really nicely, considering she's on the program with Frankie Boyle, who was like, you know, eviscerating everyone in sight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's really nice. She seems like a nice person. Okay. I'd like to hang out with Michelle. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Whelmed. Whelmed is a good way of putting it. Very, very whelmed. Let's change vibes from the dance floor queen of Danny to U2, and altogether more somber affair, especially with the relevance that this track has taken on over the last few weeks.
Yes.
This is U2 and Walk On.
This is the fourth track off their 10th studio album, All That You Can't Leave Behind, and originally was a song about Aung San Suu Kyi, who was kind of, what would you say, arrested by the National League for... Well, she was the chairperson of the National League for Democracy, who was kind of placed in house arrest from 1989 to 2010 for her pro-democracy activities in back then what was known as Burma. And here we are.
Mm-hmm.
If you have no idea what's going on in Myanmar, which is Myanmar is the new name for Burma, we're actually back in that exact same position, and she is arrested and the country's on a political lockdown, which is pretty frightening.
I in my job, I've been producing more shows lately, which has meant I've had to kind of like step into the world of journalism. I'm kind of moonlighting as a journalist. It's total imposter syndrome. I don't feel like a real journalist, but there's bits and bobs I do and I go, ooh, you can do this, get you. And I found myself getting into Burmese politics, which I never thought I'd ever do. But it's fascinating because this track comes along at an interesting time, as you've mentioned, Scott, because Burma was under military control for 49 years. And obviously for a large section of that, you had Aung San Suu Kyi, who was under house arrest. She came out in 2010. She actually became the leader of the government in 2015. Here we are in 2021. At the end of last year, she won the election in a landslide, but the Burmese military have overthrown her in a coup d'etat. And now she's back under house arrest. She's in a much different position to what she was when this song came out, because I guess when this U2 song came out, she was kind of seen as like a democracy darling. Like, people looked at her as like a real, like, inspirational figure. Mm-hmm. Since she's been in government, there's been some things that she's done with relation to particular groups that has attracted controversy. And now, in house arrest, there's more of a divisive feel about her antics. I don't want to say too much more than that because, you know, job. But yeah, things are interesting. And it's funny that, well, not funny, haha, obviously, but it's interesting that we're talking about this again 20 years on from when Bono decided to write a song about it.
Do you know what? I wouldn't have known anything about this, but my wife's friend lives in Myanmar and has been unable to get in contact.
Yeah, because they've taken down Facebook and Twitter, haven't they?
So the Wi-Fi and electricity as well is an issue. So any devices that they have that can't connect to things are starting to die. But we managed to get some sort of contact a few days ago saying that she's fine and she's out banging pots and pans.
Mm.
But yeah, I couldn't believe it whenever I look at it, thinking, hold on a second, because I think I was doing it off Wikipedia for the first bit. Yeah, and I was like, is this are the dates of this wrong? Because this seems like it says 1989 to 2010. This isn't the news headlines at the moment. Yeah. My phone keeps vibrating, telling me all of this crap.
Yeah,
I just what's the chances that we're here right now doing this?
I know.
If we look at the song, I didn't really recognize it.
No,
until the hook or until the chorus kind of came in, and even then, I didn't really remember much.
Yeah.
Of it,
yeah,
you know,
it didn't sound how I expected. I have unfortunately kind of forgot it because it isn't my speed, but it's not the speed I expected. I was expecting to be the pace of Sometimes You Can't Make It On Your Own or those kind of slower songs.
Yeah,
but this actually has got a bit of a tempo to it. It's Brian Eno produced. I mean, if you go on the Wikipedia page for any U2 song, you'll see the extensive notes for how the song came together, because I guess they put all that out there for you to read, and it's fascinating to see. Yeah, this song's interesting because although it's definitely about the Burmese situation of 20 years ago, and I guess even longer before that, this could be about anything for anyone. This is a universal themed song that anybody can really find meaning in. You haven't got to know about Burmese politics to really get it.
No, and what they did say is, even though it was about that, they did say that they just amended a few of the lyrics because they were, you two were inspired by her husband and son thinking of things from their perspective.
Mm.
So they did kind of adapt it more into a love song about somebody having to leave a relationship for all of the right reasons.
Yeah.
So you kind of get that from it. I still can't hear it because, and this is what I was expecting, in my head, whenever I say "You Two Walk On," I hear Oasis. Is it "Hold On"?
Yeah,
I hear that, and I can't remember what that is.
That's "Stop Crying Your Heart Out."
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
Mm.
And I do feel like this is, and I want to give this a go, and I feel like I want to listen to it more and more. But for the purpose of this, what we do on the podcast, it would be unfair of me to go, I'm going to listen to this 10 times instead of my normal two or three.
Mm.
I do want, in life, I'm going to listen to it more to give it a chance. But for podcast purposes, I have to kind of say it's pretty forgettable quickly.
Yeah.
Which is shocking for you two. It's just not like you two.
Yeah. I mean, this won Record of the Year at the Grammys. So clearly it struck a chord, and I guess struck a nerve politically as well.
Mm-hmm.
I like the lyric. I've only pulled one lyric out because I could have pulled a lot of lyrics from this, because it is one of those songs that, you know, it has deep meaning in every syllable. But the lyric I pulled out is, "What you got, they can't steal it." I think that's a really nice thing. You know, she may be under house arrest, she may be getting absolutely battered from everyone about her stance, but she's holding firm.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they can't take away her spirit, they can't take away her determination to make things right.
Yeah.
That's what stood out to me. And I think, like I say, even if you don't know anything about Burmese politics and you just listen to the song at face value, that's a good lesson to take for yourself.
Yeah,
there's literally parts of you that nobody can take away. Don't let them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Damn right. Stand firm.
You should do speeches. I think this is good. You and Bono go give some talks. Maybe we naughty TED talk featuring Bono.
Oh dear, Nelly Furtado, underrated. This is in number 6 for the Lighthouse Family. We can claim them as Northeast talent because they were formed in Newcastle, so we'll take that.
Were they?
Yeah, oh. They're both from London, but they studied at Newcastle Uni,
mm-hmm.
so we can kind of claim them as local talent. Awesome. We'll always take that. Not that everyone wants to, because I know the Lighthouse Family have got a bit of a reputation with some people as just like, people don't want to hear this, people don't want to, if this comes on the radio, people are kind of like repulsed by it. There's a bit of like a, would you say like a Nickelback factor about Lighthouse Family? There's an attitude about them that people just can't stand them. I'm kind of like, they're so inoffensive. Like, why would you take such an issue with them?
Yeah.
Like, they're clearly trying to be inoffensive, but yet they've managed to offend so many people.
Are people offended by the fact that some things that are classed as easy listening are easy listening, and do people feel sucked in by it and then they get annoyed? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I did listen to this on the way in again, and it was on a playlist, and I was like, oh, I'm going to skip this, and then didn't skip it. And went off somewhere else in my head. And then the song was coming to the end. I was like, I didn't skip that.
Mm.
And it didn't annoy me. So yeah, you do get sucked into stuff. And like, I don't necessarily rate this very highly, but I did get sucked in. But we listened to it.
Yeah, this is Lighthouse Family. And I wish I knew how it would feel to be free/one.
I wish I knew how it would feel. We'll be right back.
first single from the third album, Whatever Gets You Through the Day, a cover of Nina Simone's classic of the same name. Lyrically, I think it's nice. I think it's really good. I've actually put the word great down on paper.
Nice.
But I think I wouldn't have noticed that had I not been doing this analysis.
Yeah.
You know, overall tone, I think it's great. I don't think you can ever fault the tone of Lighthouse Family.
No.
But yeah, I find it as fine. I've not written many notes.
No.
I do think the bridge turns to One by U2. Mm. Which is strange.
Yeah.
I don't need that in it, really, but yeah. Do you have anything to say?
Not especially, no. I mean, there's like on the radio station I work for on the Sunday morning, the breakfast show plays. It's kind of the show has a religious element to it. Like the stories that go in that program tend to go through a religious lens, so the music kind of accompanies that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of like non-denominational, religious, spiritual-sounding, easy-listening music, and this pops up quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one thing you can say is the Lighthouse Family have kept that show in business with its music, because most weeks there's at least one Lighthouse Family track, because this is that's their scene.
Yeah.
The people who pelt them for it, and as I say, like it's so inoffensive, yet they've managed to offend so many people, and it feels unnecessary to me. Not everything has to be for everyone, and this is a real example of that. Like, there's such an audience for this. If you go in the comment section of this video, you'll see how much this track means to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it doesn't really light us up,
no,
doesn't mean it's bad, or doesn't mean
no.
I think they get a really hard time, and it's unfortunate. People I know have been there when they've slagged them off, and I'm kind of like, it's not for you. Just move on. Like, there's so much music that is for you. Leave them alone.
This is a good example of, right, so if you think about 2001, the people who have money and are going to spend it on music, you're talking young people.
Mm.
So I'm assuming not very many young people went and bought this. My mate Craig would have bought this. Like, he's totally a Lovers Around 11 kind of guy, and like a bit spiritual. But he would have bought that. But I think this got to number six. This is people who don't usually buy music being so moved by something going out to buy this song this point. So, you know, it goes to show how good it is for people. Yeah, it doesn't light us up generally. And the difficulty I've got with it is it's not my favourite Lighthouse Family track, so I think they've got some really good songs.
Mm.
But, you know, if you ever need a playlist and some, let me think of the word, like mindfulness, stuff like this, if you don't immediately have any Nickelback anger towards Lighthouse Family, you could just sit and actually chill to this and it would make you feel better.
Yeah.
Being on a walk, sniffing the air, doing something, you know, like doing something just outdoorsy might really just lift you up. But yeah.
Mm.
People are scared to let go sometimes and be vulnerable.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think people attack what they don't understand, and this would make people feel vulnerable, and maybe that's just a position people don't want to be in.
Yeah.
They don't want to be made to feel vulnerable by this track, so they just attack it because they don't know how to react to it.
Yeah.
I think let them in, or if you don't let them in, just don't slam the door in their face. Just guide them to the next person who maybe it is for. But yeah, leave them alone, you bloody bullies. Anyway. Let's go for another Spice Girl. Jerry Halliwell with her latest solo effort, the third and final single from the album Scream If You Want To Go Faster. More singles were planned, but this just didn't do the numbers required. It's called Calling.
Got to number 7 in the chart. It was written by Jerry and Peter John Vitesse, I think that's how you pronounce your name, and it was her favourite from the album and the one that she expected to be a number one.
Mm.
I've written down that I dreaded it because I could hear it coming.
Yeah.
And then actually I'm pleasantly surprised, and this isn't me being like the diehard Jerry fan of years gone by trying to defend her.
Mm.
I was actually pretty shocked. I was actually shocked at how thin and bad some of the production is, especially in the opener. There's like a xylophone or glockenspiel that is cheap.
Mm.
But it actually really becomes about her vocals and becomes really basic and simple. Where are you? Because I'm assuming that they've got a tirade of bullets on standby.
I'm kind of the opposite to you, where I wanted it to be good, and I wasn't dreading it. I was kind of like, let's see what this is. She hasn't impressed me too much over the series, but I'll go in open-minded, and I was disappointed.
Right.
Very disappointed. I hadn't thought too much about the production being thin when I hear it back in my head, because I can still hear this. Unlike some tracks like U2 Walk On, which is clearly a great song, I couldn't hear that, but I can hear this. It's all for the wrong reasons. All for the wrong reasons. Yeah, production is thin now that I think about it. She's sounding very female Robbie here.
Oh, yeah.
For me. And it's, we now know that they're friends.
Yeah.
We now know that they're friends, and she has that about her, both in how she sounds and in the kind of just the character of it. I feel those kind of, and she's always if you had to kind of line up Spice Girls and take that, you'd say that Robbie and Jerry were always going to be friends, because they were always the kind of like the show-offy kind of like party piece ones.
Yeah.
Robbie was always doing stuff that got him in trouble. Jerry with the Union Jack dress that everyone was, you know, fawning over. The big legs at the Brits, all those kind of attention-grabbing things. It makes total sense that these two are aligned. Jerry's vocals, I didn't like them on the one before this. Was that Scream If You Wanna Go Faster? Was there another one that we did as well?
Yeah, Scream If You Wanna Go Faster, I think. There was a soundtrack one before that. This is the third, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, It's Raining Men as well. So
It's Raining Men?
Yeah. I was okay with Bag It Up, but that's now three in a row where I've not been impressed with Jerry's vocals at all. She's no Mariah Carey, let's put it that way.
Oh, I like her vocals in this.
She always sounds like she's holding back. I don't like her lower tones. I am coming around to lower tones generally, but I don't like her lower tones really. I wonder if she can do anything else. I never hear her do very much different stuff.
I have got down that, and because this is where we were decided the last time, is I like her lowers and you don't like her lowers. I like the lowers in this one. I do think she's a bit more pushed when she gets to the chorus and goes high, but again, Jerry was always about the lower stuff, and I do think that it really does show off how distinctive her voice is. I do think her voice suits the verses more than it suits the chorus. But I think, and if you've watched and followed Jerry from the Spice Girls, you know, even, because what didn't make sense to me was whenever I watched Spice World, she was the nerd, and she was pretty much the middle class politician, and I never saw that for her really, which didn't make sense to young Scott, because, you know, she's coming out in a Union Jack dress, she was the loud gobby one and all that kind of crack, but she was very much the bookworm, and actually you saw her that she was quite deep and intelligent, and then when you look back at the narrative of what happened Spice Girls wise she made a lot of the decisions that made them pretty successful. And she was the one that challenged a lot of the men. But this one, I think this is lyrically quite smart, the way that she's, because I didn't think I was going to see her being the songwriter here. And lyrically, I think she's done quite a good job with this guy. And it makes sense now whenever you know. And if you follow her on Insta and all of that kind of crack now, you'll see that she is very intelligent. And we, you know, as a girl who started out as a topless game show host or something like that in a Turkish television program, you never really felt that for her. And we always knew the backstory of, like, her mother and all of this kind of crack. So, yeah, this feels more like in line with where I see Jerry now. You know, if you ever see an Instagram, she only wears white. Like, she's always wearing white.
Right.
Always outside, clean, running around fields and stuff like that. Very, very posh. So this links up with me. So I think, like, I've gone into, like, a new territory with her. But tone-wise, I like it. It's still not the best pop song.
No.
You know,
no.
There's way better things in the episode. But where I've written down dreaded it, I'm actually really pleasantly surprised with it, and I think maybe I can see why people didn't get it. It's too deep for people. It doesn't make sense because it clashes with what people thought of her at the time. You know, we still thought she was Raining Men. We still thought she was Scream If You Want to Go Faster, and no one was listening. Nobody was going to go, Jerry's got a new track out, can't wait to hear the lyrics in it.
Yeah.
And then the production was underperforming, so...
I don't want to be too negative, but I did laugh twice during this. I did laugh at two bits that kind of caught me off guard.
Well, and the lyrics or the video?
If you factored the video in too, maybe I laughed even more than that. Sorry, Jerry. I'm really sorry if you hear this. I'll say a nice thing after this is all finished, right? The hear me now just sounded so strained, and it kind of caught me off guard. I remember I was walking to get the bus to work, and I had the playlist on. This came on. I thought, oh god, here we go. And that bit made me chuckle. And then the forever and ever whisper, the forever and ever.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I wasn't expecting it, and it was an instinctive kind of like, ah! I'm glad I was outside.
If I'd have paid attention to this when I was younger, that would have been a Gertie pant dropper at that. Just that silly little...
Oh, really?
Yeah, just for Jerry factors, not because it was a great use of production or a great use of backing vocal or anything like that. But yeah, I do get that. And I think, you know, I'd say Jerry would laugh at that actually too.
Yeah,
I think she'd kind of have a giggle at it. But yeah, okay. No, I don't know what to... we don't need to debate it. It's not going to like... Not going to win the episode, is it?
No, it's not. Do you think Emma Bunton would do a better job of this? Because it gives me more Bunton vibes. The video is definitely more Bunton than Jerry, from what we know so far. Not that you have to stay the same for your whole career, but this is definitely more Bunton for me.
I don't feel like Emma would have written these lyrics. No. I think these lyrics are very Jerry because they're complex.
Mm, maybe, yeah.
Like, Emma would have kept things simple and light, really, and any depth to Emma's would have been rewritten in a different way.
Yeah. I said I'd say a nice thing about Jerry to close it out because I said so many negative things. Can you give us a hand?
the lower register of her vocal was very good at complementing other parts of Spice Girls. There you go.
Yeah, every orchestra needs that kind of instrument. Every good song needs a bass guitar. She provided bass guitar wonderfully in the Spice Girls. But you can't play... Oh, it's ended negative, sorry. You can't play a bass guitar on your... That can't be a song on its own. You can't play a bass guitar.
No.
She's got nice hair. There you go. Thank you. So in the charts this week was another track from a actor. We've had Nicole Kidman this week. We've also got Kate Winslet. Now, we did Kate Winslet at Christmas because we did a Christmas special. So we've kind of already, you know, been there, done that. We've already covered it. We'll play a little bit here. This is Kate Winslet, What If. What if I had never let you go? Would you be the man I used to know? If I'd stayed, if you tried, if we could only turn back time. But I guess we'll never know. So if I recall, the comments we sort of made at the time were, it's an actor, it's a very performative performance, and she's quite embarrassed by it.
Yeah, I now hear that in other actors who have had pop careers, because I remember you saying everything was really enunciated whenever actors tend to sing.
Yeah.
And now if I've listened to any other songs, I hear it.
Yeah.
And, you know, even with Something Stupid, with Robbie and Nicole, I was listening to it a bit differently, and it's like, actually, yeah, non-film stars sing in accents,
yeah,
don't they? They
yeah.
make accents. And it's like, it's weird whenever you just think, you know, somebody like Cheryl sings and then there's nothing Geordie about her accent whenever they sing. So you choose your own little accent whenever you become a singer. It's awfully brilliant. But then you've got Sophie Ellis Bextor, who's just alien to everything,
yeah,
and is just like the weirdest posh singer you've ever met in your life.
Yeah.
But yeah, happy days. But Kate Winslet, definitely unique, definitely global film superstar with every bit of tone in that song.
Yeah, she raised money for charity. You know, she on the proviso of doing the song, she said that we've got to make sure the money goes to a children's charity. So that's what happened, which is all good. The film she was in was kind of critically panned, but that we don't need to mention that. We don't need to mention that. That's fine. We've done the track. If you want to hear the full review, you can go back to our Christmassiest Christmas episode, which we did on surprisingly Christmas. But in the meantime, I thought, since we've been there, done that, we'll do something else instead. And I've got a game for you. Scott, do you want to play a game?
I love play games.
This is a game called Winslet or Winshit.
As in Winslet-y-lit, litty-lit, that kind of litty-lit, Winslet.
If you like, that's fine, yeah.
Okay.
So basically, I've got some film plots of which Kate Winslet is in. Some of them are real and some of them are not real. And Scott, it's your job to decide which is real and which is not. Are you up for it?
I think I only know one Kate... Oh no, I know two. I know two Kate Winslet films.
Should we start you easy? We'll start you easy.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, this is a film where Kate Winslet plays a selfish upper-class teenager who allows a poor person to die of hypothermia.
That is... yeah, that's an alternative view of her and the whole battle of buoyancy on that thing, isn't she, with Leonardo DiCaprio? That's Titanic.
That is indeed Titanic from 1997, yes. There was definitely... I know this has been beaten to death, but there was enough room on the board. There was...
It was about buoyancy. They both would have sank.
Well, wouldn't that have been more romantic?
Then nobody would have been able to tell the tale, and we wouldn't have seen that woman, and Brittany wouldn't have been sending someone down to get the diamonds at the end or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
She sent him into the ocean at the end. You know, we... Without that, there was no Britney.
Oh,
that
shit.
Moment would not have existed. And oops, I did it again. So thank you, Kate.
Okay, fine. I guess so. I'll let you have that one. That's fine. Right, second one. Kate Winslet plays a young Australian woman indoctrinated into a cult by Harvey Keitel.
Oh, that sounds like it should be true because it's too specific, but I can't tell what film that would be. But I would say yes.
Yep, it's a real film. It's called Holy Smoke from 1999.
Oh.
Hmm. Okay, here's another one. Kate Winslet plays a locksmith who trains to become a surgeon so she can save the life of her longtime crush who is dying in hospital.
That sounds real, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be Kate Winslet, so I think you're playing a trick on me here, and it's a different actress that's done that, but it's not Kate Winslet.
No, that is a fake film. It's called... Do you want to guess what I've called the fake film, considering it's a locksmith and a surgeon who might be doing keyhole surgery?
What's the Flash one? Flash dance? Flash Gash. I was thinking of a surgeon with a knife. That's what my gash is. Sorry.
I'm glad it's me. I'm glad it's me who makes these games and not you, because it could go a very different way, couldn't it? Oh my god. No, I called it Unlock My Heart, which I thought was quite nice.
Yeah, that is quite sweet.
Tony Braxton could do the theme tune, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the ones where everything's in the trailer and you don't need to see the film, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I reckon that came out in 2012. Okay, here's another one. This is Kate Winslet. She played a businesswoman who goes on a date with someone who has testicles dangling from his neck.
Oh, is this going to be something like Chicken Run or something like that, where it's actually a chicken or a turkey? if that's real people, that can't be real. That's a no.
It's a real film.
Eh?
It's a film called Movie 43. It was a series of like sort of short films within a film. They were all kind of like, the whole premise was just, it was just rude, basically.
Okay.
And yeah, she goes on a date with Hugh Jackman, who has a scarf around his neck when he meets her.
Uh-huh.
And he takes the scarf off and he's got like a pair of balls hanging out of his neck.
Wow.
And of course, being like a gross... Actually, you'd probably enjoy it. It's probably your kind of film. Or maybe... Well, it could go either way, but... You should at least try. But yeah, he's got like a bowl of soup and his balls are dangling in the soup sort of thing. And yeah. But yeah, it's one of those things where you see like, Kate Winslet's in that?
Mm-hmm.
Kate Winslet did that? Jesus. I think a lot of the actors involved, people questioned like, were families being held at ransom for them to take part in that film?
Yeah.
You know, were they paid exuberant amounts of money to do that? But yeah, Kate Winslet, pair of nuts, Hugh Jackman, it happened.
Oh.
Yeah.
One thing I did learn, probably when did I learn this? Maybe in about 2011 or 12, is that sometimes, and this is more a TV thing, sometimes people get signed to a big value contract. So somebody might go, right, Liam, our management company has signed you to ITV for £300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So here's £300,000, but you have to just work it off.
Yeah.
And then sometimes there's pop-up shows like midday cookery programs that are just pants because they have to work off the money within the contract. So things just pop up all of the time. So maybe that's in Hollywood too, and we just don't know about it. And actually some stars just have to do films because they've been paid $5 million or something on a contract that they have to work off.
I think so, yeah. I think, yeah.
Also, is that film where the term teabagging came from?
I think teabagging predates Movie 43, but certainly they, if anything, they maybe put an end to it because it was so visceral and so extreme that maybe we all saw the balls in the soup and thought, let's never go there again.
What type of soup was it?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I have actually seen that film.
Was it smooth? Was it a broth? You know, was it lumpy?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and watch Hugh Jackman dip his balls in soup to get the answer to the question for you.
Yeah, important.
Yeah, do you want one more?
Yes, please.
Okay. Kate Winslet plays an advertising executive who becomes clinically depressed after her daughter dies, so her friends hire a private investigator to find evidence to prove that she's unfit to run the company, and they also hire three struggling actors to pose as the abstract concept of love, time and death to visit Kate's character and make her look unstable so they can hand the company over to her to the friends.
That sounds real. I've no idea which one it is, and I was hoping the last one was going to be one that I was wanting, but that's not it. I'll say that's true.
Sort of. It's a real film. Kate Winslet is in it, but actually the main character who all that stuff happens to is Will Smith, and the film is called Collateral Beauty.
Oh, I've not seen
it. It came out in 2016, and basically it's one of the most emotionally manipulative films you've ever seen, and it has one of the most emotionally manipulative trailers you've ever seen. So if you see the trailer, it makes it look like it's going to be about Will Smith writing letters, and he writes letters to love, death and time as a way of like coping with his grief of his daughter, who's like a young daughter. Mm-hmm. And the trailer makes it look like three actual manifestations of love, time, and death are what come and talk to him and kind of like help him get through his grief. What you don't see in the trailer is that it's actually his friends who are pulling strings. So they notice that he's depressed. They see that the company's going to go to shit if he stays in charge much longer. So as I said in the thing there, they hire a private investigator to dig dirt on him. They hire actors to pose as what he's written in his letters to go and talk to him and make him look like he's crazy so that they can then digitally remove the actors from the videos that they've taken of him talking to these people and make it look like he's talking to himself or nobody in an attempt to get him fired and take control themselves, all while being his friend.
Interesting.
And it is utterly horrible. Until the end, when suddenly they kind of do a little thing that makes it kind of contextualize all of it, but if you sit through the hour and a half of the film, you'll feel very uneasy because it's very, very cruel.
Yeah, I need to be in a specific mood for that.
and also, as far as I know, they haven't quite perfected the art of digitally removing people from videos.
Oh, no! Uh-huh.
Like, there's shots where they're looking at a phone video of Will Smith front on, as if, like, there would have been a person there and they've removed the person from the video and you can still see Will Smith behind. You can't remove people from videos. You can't do that. You literally physically can't do that yet.
Interesting.
Unless you're, like, a billionaire like Elon Musk. But as far as I know, these are not Elon Musk. They're just people.
I feel like I'd like to see that. And really, I think I would need to have a lot of spare time if that's the thing that I'm going to put on. But yeah, I would, you know, if you've got a list that you're never going to get to, I would put it on the list that I'm never going to get to. And then sometime, if it just happens to be on the film channel or something, I'll just chuck it on in the background while, you know, something else is going down. But you didn't choose The Holiday. I thought, I'm going to definitely get 2 out of 2 here, Titanic and The Holiday. Well, and you didn't go there.
I didn't go there.
Well, thanks for that.
I haven't seen it. I didn't want to give you an easy point.
You've not seen The Holiday? That's so strange.
No, I haven't seen The Holiday, no.
Okay. Yeah.
In summary, Kate Winslet's been in a lot of shit. as much as she's adored and appreciated and loved, and you know, of course, because it's Kate Winslet, she's amazing. And yeah, I think in real life she comes across as an interesting person who, like, is up for a laugh and seems like a lot of fun. She's probably been in a few of those contracts where she's just had to do some stuff she didn't want to do.
Oh, everybody's done that, haven't they, though? Loads
yeah,
of people have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'd be hardest to be a comedy actor because you do end up in some rubbish sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, hard going. But yeah, so what did it get? What was it out of 5? Was it out of 5?
I think you got 2 or 3. Oh. I think you got 3, 4.
I think there was a point. There was maybe a half in there. Did it, because I kind of semi-guessed something right.
Yeah, there was always going to be a half because the last one was a sort of. You were never going to get sort of, were you?
I always forget that your last ones are always a trick. The best thing is to just not tell me it's the last one.
Yeah,
because then I shouldn't give my tips away.
So this is the second single we're done from this
it
lot?
Is, yes.
Is this the second one? Yeah. We all loved the first track so much. They've actually had some tracks in between since that one. They had Best Friends Forever. They had Do the Lollipop. And they had Bananas, which is surely where Gwen Stefani got her inspiration for Hollaback Girl. Surely.
Must be.
Surely.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping so.
This is the Tweenies, and they're back with a Christmas song. This can only be... Well, I'm not gonna prejudge anything. We'll get into it and see what Scott thinks. I'm not gonna try and put words in his mouth. This is I Believe in Christmas.
So this got to number 9 in the charts, and yeah, this is the follow up to number 1, which we've covered. Which wasn't a number one. But my biggest concern here is that the Tweenies historically have been pretty triggering for you, Liam.
Yeah.
Because of like youth trauma. How are you feeling about this?
Well, I'd largely gotten over the youth trauma. And then you've mentioned it there, and now it's starting to come flooding back.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Am I the trigger as opposed to the Tweenies?
Yeah, I think possibly. Yeah, I had largely forgotten, and now it's and now it all feels very fresh and very real. I can see myself at the arena just feeling the heartbreak of finding out the Tweenies aren't real people. Yeah. No, I had forgotten, and I did assess this purely on its merits rather than any kind of childhood trauma. Oh, it is really all coming back now. Oh, blimey. No, I think this could have been a lot worse. I think if we... So at Christmas, we did the Fast Food Rockers Christmas song. And I kind of feel the same way as I felt about that one. It's like, if you want a song that is pure Christmas, then this is surely the one you go for. Like, if you're a Christmassy person, you don't really care about how good it is. You just want a song that makes you feel Christmassy and puts you in the festive spirit. By hook or by crook, this just floods your senses with Christmas.
Yeah.
And for that reason, it's all right.
Okay.
As a song, it's you know, it's nothing like the quality of Bob the Builder. Like, if we're going to put those two side by side, of Bob the Builder being, like, written by somebody who has won awards for songwriting, mm-hmm. and this being the kind of thing that an intern probably put together in half an hour.
It's no Cheeky Christmas by the Cheeky Girls.
It really
I'll tell
isn't.
You that.
No, it really
it
isn't.
It really isn't. And every year, I love the Cheeky Girls one more and more and more. Like, literally end up falling in love with it. Weirdly enough, okay, lyrically, like, vocally, it's not great.
No.
I do like that it exists because I love the fact there's a market for young people, and I probably respect that more now that I'm a parent. We slagged off, was it hearsay that I said it was all too bright and star and fire and all really kind of camp descriptive words that just didn't suit?
Yeah.
The words in this suit the tweenies.
Yeah.
But saying that, I do think this could actually, if you took away the bubblegum pop child element of it, this could actually be a semi-successful pop song for another band.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, you could have given this to somebody else and it could have been good. But you would it's called I Believe in Christmas and the lyrics are all very Christmassy. You'd have to know that it was a Christmas fun office party.
Yeah.
It's going to be on the shit music channels with like Z-list celebrities on the music channel going, well, when I was about in 2003, you know, it's going to live on like that.
Yeah. But
I don't have much to say about it. It doesn't cause any glow in me. My little factual brain just goes, good that it exists. Could be a pop track for somebody else. Cool. Done.
I think I'm okay with it being like a gateway track for kids. Like, if this is what kids listen to as their first bits of music.
Yeah.
I'm kind of okay with it. It could be a lot worse. It could be a lot worse. I'd rather they heard this than some hearsay tracks.
Big words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry hearsay, but I'm kind of okay with this, where some of the stuff that you've put out is actively offending me. So there you go. Number one came on my recommendations after I heard this, and I listened to it again, and it's actually a bop. It's actually a proper bop.
Is it?
Yeah, it really is. I don't remember being too negative about it at the time, but if I was, I'd take it back because it's actually a tune. Yeah, this year being in lockdown has softened me up. It's really softened me up.
Well, I'm getting misty at Hermes House Band. I think we've all been impacted in ways we just never could have predicted.
No, you know what I've realised is that. Actually, I don't like people coming within 2 meters of me anyway, so I'm kind of okay if we social distance forever.
Weirdly.
Because I don't like people over my shoulder sort of thing.
As I was walking into the building, I thought it'd be quite funny to put a Facebook post on asking, so to those people that didn't like people before lockdown and wanting people to be away from them, how are you doing? Like, and it was a genuine question, how is things impacting you? How are things impacting you right now? How do you feel about the social distance? And has it been better for you? Or have you realised actually you do need more social interactions than kind of what you get? But I don't like being touched, but randomly I'm a huggy person. But I'll not hug somebody that doesn't want to be hugged. Like me and you both experienced somebody who forces hugs upon you in any environment. I'm like, I don't want you to touch me now. I don't hug me, or at least ask me if I want a hug and then accept me going, no, thank you, I'll take a handshake or something like that. Or let's high five. But I'm generally quite a huggy person, so I touch people quite a lot, but everybody's happy with that, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
No.
Mm. It's on recorded audio now, in case that does go to trial.
Yeah.
No, I think I don't like people, and now that it's a thing, if somebody does breach the 2 meter rule, alarm bells go off, and now, like, even if I'm at home, I mean, like, somebody stands next to us, like, a member of my family, it's like standing within close proximity. I'm like, get away.
Oh, I'm still watching TV programs and you're too close. You're too close. Get back.
Oh,
why are you so close to them?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Lockdown's only been around for a year, you know? So I am spotting things that are weird. I actually saw somebody saw two people in the same household standing really close to each other and was uncomfortable by it because it was like, you shouldn't be that close to each other. And I thought, oh no, you're a bubble.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It's just weird, isn't it? Anyway.
Yeah.
So there you have it. That was 2001.
Yeah.
It's officially closed. The book has been closed.
Stick a fork in me. I'm done.
This is where we'll find out there's been a track we missed out by a mistake.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We did, when we started doing tracks in 2001, we noticed some significant changes in attitudes in society, in production. And whenever we were like, oh, that song from 2001, that sounds way like it should have been from May 2000. I wonder when we get into 2002, what we're going to say about songs from 2001.
Yeah, completely.
So, It's amazing that we're like zoomed in on the evolution of it all, when maybe when we started this podcast, we didn't really notice that we would be evolving so much and noticing these changes. But
yeah,
life has changed zooming in on these songs. I think I'd be choosing, if I wasn't zoomed in the songs the way we are, I'd be choosing what the people are choosing for the winner of the polls.
Yeah. We'll do more of those in 2002. We might try and do it a different way. We might do it on Instagram for a change, or Facebook for a change, or something, because
yeah,
there's demand for other platforms to get some love too.
Yeah.
You're good at doing Instagram stories. I don't really do stories. I like things that are permanent in life.
Oh.
Stories, the fact that they dissolve after a day.
Am I good?
I can't get on board with them. Yeah, you do nice ones on your profile of the song lyrics and stuff to get people up to speed with them.
That's when I've got a bit of toilet time.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, that's nice to know that you're doing podcast work on the lav, because I do that too.
I get my best work done on the toilet.
Oh, me too.
If I'm messaging you, there's a 79% to 84.5% chance I'm on the toilet, to be fair.
And that feels like a nice note to end it on.
Yeah.
As promised, a special announcement. This Friday, the 2nd of April, 2021, we are launching the 2001 World Cup of Hit Pop Songs. It's on our Twitter page at TNNPod. 48 tracks in contention, either picked by me, Scott, or you, the listener, as a winner in one of the last 25 episodes of the podcast. Only one can win, and it's up to you. So if you haven't already, do follow us on Twitter at TNNPod. And if you want to have a reminder of what we said about the songs that are in running for the crown, then go to YouTube and search The Naughtiest Naughty. Subscribe to our channel. So few of you have, because it's basically got nothing on at the moment. But soon it will have 48 reviews. All of the songs we're going to be competing against each other. You can take a listen to what we've said. And then on Friday, battle will begin. We'll be doing mini episodes of the podcast throughout the World Cup to keep you updated and build some tension, build some atmosphere. So keep listening. It's all in anticipation of Series 3, which will start very shortly after the World Cup finishes. We're so excited for what we've got planned for you. We're so excited for the future. But it all starts this Friday, the 2nd of April, on our Twitter page at TNNPod for the 2001 World Cup of Hit Pop Songs.